AM 1400, 93.3 FM K1, and it is a City Matters program as we get the opportunity to welcome in members of the staff and or management of the City of Bartlesville. And we start typically off with City Manager Ed Gordon. He is still absent from this microphone, although working his way back to you, if I can quote the song. But Mike Bailey, interim City Manager, sitting in. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you doing today?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A little cloudy, but still pleasant for the final or for the middle half of March. I'll take it, you know?
Little cloudy, little cold, and it appears that it's an hour earlier than it seems to be, or perhaps it's an hour later than it seems to be. I called the chief, and I think I woke him up.
Okay.
Either that, or he's just a little grumpy before
that,
he has
that was
coffee.
Our fire chief, as opposed
right.
to a chief of police.
No, okay. our fire chief. I haven't talked to the chief of police today yet. I'm not sure if he knows we're on daylight savings time or not, but the fire chief apparently didn't care for the realization.
I thought firefighters work 24 hours.
Well, I kind of thought so, too. I was a little disappointed, Charlie.
Just the fact that I've seen your name pop up on my phone.
Okay. So there's some suggestion here that it really wasn't. It wasn't the daylight savings time. It was my phone call.
Okay. Well,
so probably would have had the same reaction no matter what.
Well, there's a certain amount of dismay in his life either way.
That's right. And apparently I'm the source of it. That's good. I'd really been working for that. It's one of my goals.
At least you recognize your role in life.
Yes. If I can cause a little despair in my fire chief, it's a good day.
It is a good day. The city had, from your perspective and from at least 66% of the perspective of the voters that participated in the election, a good day last Tuesday.
Did have a good day last Tuesday. I wanted to first off thank the voters. It was the city, as most of everyone listening knows, there was a GO bond election last Tuesday. There was four questions on that GO bond, and they all passed with what I would call very high margins of victory. Of course, for a city, we're only required to have 50% plus one to pass a GO bond.
Unlike the supermajority required for school bonds.
That's right. There appeared to be some confusion on that with some people, but most everybody knew that it was 50%. Always has been, always will be. There was four questions. The first one was equipment, and I got two guys here that'll talk a little bit more about what they had in this GO bond, but we won't spend a whole lot of time on it. I know most people are very well aware of what was in it, because we've been talking exclusively and extensively about it for the last 3-4 weeks. The equipment question passed with 80% yes. The parks and recreation question, which included the Tower Green, passed with 66% yes. The streets question passed with 84% yes, and the storm drainage question passed with 82% yes. I'll tell you, Charlie, in my years here, I think that's probably the highest margin of victories we've seen across the board for a GO bond. So wanted to thank the voters for their faith in the city of Bartlesville. We truly do appreciate it. We honor that. So the next step, of course, for us is to get these bonds issued, get the projects planned, and get them executed. So the bond schedule, and I realize we've talked a little bit about this with anybody who had attended any of our presentations, but the bond issue, the schedule, by June 30th of this year, we'll issue about $10 million in bonds. So the total authorization was 16.5. We'll get over $10 million out of the way right out of the gate here. By the fall of this year, we'll issue about another $3 million, and then the fall of next year, somewhere in the range of another $3 million as well. So really short schedule for issuing these. I didn't bring Micah Seamers because I didn't want to give him heart failure this early on Monday morning.
I'm sure he's still busy working on all those projects you were talking about the other night when I spoke to you after the votes were in.
That's right. He's definitely...
You did let him out of the office for the weekend, right?
I don't know whether he left or not, but his truck was there when I left on Friday, and it was there when I got there this morning. So he's a busy guy, but our engineering department is a little bit short. We'll probably be looking to address that with next year's budget. With the with all of these projects coming up, it's important that we get them done timely. Now I'd remind the voters that these are big projects.
Sure.
These take time to execute.
And I just to, so that we bring things along a little bit, the reason you're doing two bond issue tranches so quickly, one is this fiscal year,
Then
September is next fiscal year.
You're exactly right. And so our normal schedule is in the fall. It doesn't have to be. We could do it in the spring. It really just has to fall within a fiscal year. So this one that we're doing in June is a little later than we normally would, but the authorization that we were operating under, we issued all of those. So normally we always have some bonds outstanding. I think most of the voters know that. But when we do $16.5 million in bonds, that's we're going to do three to four issuances to get all of those off of the books. So it takes time to issue them. It takes time to plan the projects, and it takes time to actually construct them. So I know that if your street was in this GO bond, you would like to see that happening in a week or two.
How come you haven't started already?
It'll be a little longer than that. So we'll be looking down the road a little ways, but I suspect that we'll probably the first of these projects. Of course, the equipment, that's relatively easy to do. The two guys that are here with me may disagree. I've got Lieutenant Hastings. Lieutenant Hastings.
Captain.
I demoted him right here on the radio. Wow, that is Captain. That is Captain Hastings.
He's Captain. As long as he gets the same amount of money, he probably wouldn't object too far.
He might be all right with that. Wow, I don't know where that came from. Sorry, Jay. It's daylight savings time.
Okay.
This is Captain Jay Hastings. He's the captain of the Criminal Investigations Division of the Police Department. Now, Jay, in the GO bond, we had we actually had something in there for the police department that you all have been looking to replace for quite some time.
Yeah, correct. It's the current software, basically how officers in the field get dispatched calls. They now have computers in the car. It also is our dispatching system. It's software driven, as well as our reporting system. The programs we have now, it never really has worked. Once we put computers in the car, it just hasn't been up to speed as to what we need. A lot of it is the time factor. So we're looking at to replace that software with some newer software that's designed to do that.
Yeah, Sleuth, I believe, was purchased by the city probably. It was here when I got here.
Yeah, it's been probably at least 18 years ago or so, and we've had a couple of upgrades. I think we went through an upgrade in 2012 when we moved into the new dispatch center.
I believe you're right. Correct. Mm-hmm. And so those we're on the most current version of Sleuth. Unfortunately, that product is no longer meets our needs.
Right. The main problem is time. Dispatchers are delayed by trying to enter information in the computer as they get it on the phone or over the radio, and it slows down the whole process, and then there's a delay in the amount of time it takes to get to the car. So there's a lot of frustration there, and we're hoping to solve those problems.
Unfortunately, it never allowed us to live up to the potential when we put the laptops in the cars and all of the officers had access to that. The idea was that they'd have real-time access to data. They would be able to see, run their own tags and see arrest records. The dispatch, whenever they were dispatched to a call, it should have popped up on their screen. They should have had all the information.
Correct. And they're also using more than one program in their car because I believe Sleuth, like when they run tags and stuff, they can't run that through Sleuth. And we're hoping that that's something that this newer software will allow us to do, is have one program to do everything with.
So when the police department uses this software, it starts with at the very beginning. So the dispatchers start entering information in this, and then it carries it through all the way until you all are finished with a case. Ultimately, that gets transferred over into the court software, which is in my office.
Correct.
And then it goes into the municipal court and until there's a disposition on it. So a very critical piece of software for the police department.
Right. It has to flow smoothly, and it doesn't flow smoothly now. Sometimes it doesn't make it. Sometimes the information is not correct.
We were told stories about dispatchers who were having to enter information on a piece of paper because their screen was locked up. So they were logging calls manually on paper, and then once their screen freed up and they had a moment where they didn't have a call, they would have to go back and re-enter.
Right, and then that throws off the times, because when you go back to look at, serious incidents and calls, you have to take that into fact that they may not have been able to enter it in the computer exactly when they were getting the call. So it causes some problems.
And I believe you all are meeting tomorrow with your preferred vendor at this point in time, which was Spillman.
Yes, we've already been working with them, trying to speed up the process of getting this implemented. So
And assuming that you go with the preferred vendor, I think this will give you quite a bit more capabilities in addition to what Sleuth was already giving you. The much of the software that's out on the market now for these purposes has a lot more I'm going to call them modules, for lack of a better term, that will give you some other management systems. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
We're hoping to be able to, you know, have the crime reporting available to the public, you know, where you can get online and look. This program, the software, will work with that program. I think that it's already compatible. It's not anything that needs to be developed.
Right.
So we're hoping to, you know, that'll be one advantage to the citizens. They'll be able to track, you know, much as I think you can do it in Tulsa, you can log online and track, you know, crimes in your neighborhood and your area.
I was just looking at that interface actually for Kansas City over the weekend. Just,
okay.
Yeah, it's yep. pretty transparent. It really
right.
is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's ultimately what we want to do, is improve our, you know, communication with the citizens. In this day and age, it's important, you know, that they need to know exactly what's going on in their neighborhoods, and we're trying to work in ways to improve that communication.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Charlie, we also had something that the fire department needs, and of course, fire department always.
They only need trucks and hoses. Right?
That's it. The fire department always needs trucks, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a big part of it. We have a lot of trucks. And
that's what I was saying. How many trucks do you have, Chief?
We have 5 first-run pumpers. We have 3 aerial devices, a tanker, a couple brush trucks. We got a rescue truck with all types of rescue type equipment in it, a rescue boat, some other 4 or 5 other support vehicles.
So that I was just doing a quick count on that. We're talking about 11, probably 11 pieces of equipment there that have motors on them, correct?
Yeah,
and
that'd
so
be pretty close.
Most of these have 20-25 year life.
Yeah, we keep trucks for a long time.
You're right.
We really do. They build them well. It's not unusual for us to keep a truck 25 years or more.
But just doing the quick math on that, that means in order to keep those on a rotational cycle of 25 years, yeah. we have to be purchasing a vehicle every 2 years.
Yeah.
Every 2 to 3 years, we have to be purchasing a new vehicle to keep those on that cycle.
Yeah, that's right. And it takes a long time to get one. You know, so, I mean, once you do, after all the work you put into writing specs and then bidding the project and getting council's approval, and then you're, from the time you actually tell somebody that we're going to buy your truck, well, then you're probably 10, 11 months
yeah.
out.
So the full process, including bidding, is over a year from the mm-hmm. time you get the go
yeah.
Until you actually have that take delivery of those trucks.
Yeah, typically we put in the spec 240 days after the pre-build meeting is what we use typically put in the spec.
Yeah, so it's quite a process. We look forward to that as it develops, as always. Do a good job of writing those specifications and getting quality equipment. As you said, it lasts a long time. Our trucks are very reliable, thankfully.
They're very expensive.
By the nature of it, they're very expensive, and there are always old trucks in the fleet.
Yeah.
It's not like we're ignoring it, but the reality is because they're on such a long replacement cycle, 25 years, that there's always old trucks in the fleet.
Yeah.
So it's a constant process.
Yeah, it is. It's like I said, they are expensive, and luckily we do get to keep them a long time.
That's
you know,
right.
We
That's
use them
right.
for a long time.
So, but we've got a lot of other projects, Charlie, that we've talked about, but I had these guys here today, so I wanted to talk a little bit with them about those a little bit more specifically. The actual projects that are coming up, those will be prioritized by the City Council, and that will happen with the issuance of the first tranche. So, of course, and a tranche is a technical term for issuing groups of bonds. So the first tranche will be $10 million, as we said, a little over $10 million. And so at that point in time, we'll not only include the list of projects to be funded with that, but we'll plan for the next couple of years on how all of these, on when all of these projects will be done. So if citizens are interested in that, of course, the City of Bartlesville's website, Kelly Williams does a great job of communicating that. There's also the City Beat newsletter, which is a great source of information for everything that's going on in city government. And she'll keep track of that and be communicating that with the citizens as we go. But while I got the chief on his microphone here, I thought we'd talk a little bit and brought him in today because I noticed that there was a small little fire I believe it was west, northwest of town. The other day, and we're unfortunately in the wildfire season, Chief.
Yeah, it's the fire activity around here, as far as in the rural community, is going to pick up over the next month or so. Ranchers will start burning, you know, and then we'll have some other accidental fires that pop up, and on these windy days, they can really create a lot of problems for a wide area of our citizens that live in the county.
There was a story that I picked up through one of our news partners in Tulsa, but as I understand it, if it was not for Bartlesville Police or Fire Department showing up at the exact moment you did, that individual would have lost his house. I think the fire was within, I want to say 3, but it might have been 5 feet of the structure, and while the inside of the house was still pretty charred, it's standing, and they've got a lot of their possessions right now.
Yeah, I didn't speak to that gentleman. I heard the story from the guys. You know, our guys did an excellent job on that stuff. You know, we don't have we're a municipal department, so we don't have a lot of the grass firefighting equipment that our rural fire departments do have, because they're more geared towards grass and that type of fires, where we're typically more structural based. But yeah, the guys did a good job. We had a lot of help on that call. We actually had an airdrop come in. You know, we probably would have had another one, but it was getting dark by the time they got here, and they won't drop in the dark. So that's why we only had the one airdrop. But yeah, the fire got contained relatively in good shape for what they was dealing with that day. I think the winds were 30, 35 mile an hour. So, yeah, it made for some anxious moments.
So the now, Chief, during this season, of course, the very, very windy this time of year in Oklahoma, we have days of 30, 40, 50 mile an hour winds. So what should the citizens, especially those in rural areas or on the edge of rural areas, I mean, that's the reality, is that most of the city, the edges of it border rural areas. What should they do as far as fire prevention? What should they be looking out for? What can they do if they see a fire that they think might be getting out of control?
Well, it obviously, if you see a fire that is threatening your home or your property, you know, dial 911. We'll respond. But, you know, we kind of have a little guideline on our burn permits when we issue them in the city, you know, and the rule of thumb is kind of, you know, humidity in the 50% or higher range, winds less than 15 mile an hour, you know. So unfortunately, you know, not everybody out there adheres to our advice, but you know, and I will ask people too, and we'll do this through dispatch as the grass fire season continues. You know, there, like I said earlier, there will be a lot of ranchers and stuff that will be burning, and you know, they'll be running us ragged and running all the rural fire departments,
yes,
you know, ragged, chasing fires. And, you know, we will finally put a deal out to the dispatch like we normally do, that, you know, unless the fire is on your property or threatening your property, you know, don't call that fire in, because a lot of times it's just a rancher burning.
Right.
The people driving through, you know, just traveling through and sees all the smoke, and they think that we're not aware of it, you know, and it gets overwhelmed. You know, I mean, we chase these fires to get there to control burns. So, you know, we'll, when things really ramp up later in the grass fire season, you know, we'll the dispatch, they'll be aware of that type of information.
So and I think most people listening would be aware of it, but just in case they're not, not every fire out in the country is a bad thing, even though it's burning acres and acres. There is a process that ranchers and agricultural properties go through, where they burn for a number of reasons, insect control to start the growth during the spring. I mean, there's
absolutely
a lot of reasons that they
would
do it.
It gets the cover off the ground so the green grass can come up. You know, now, you know, ranchers never burn in the fall, unless, I mean, other than brush piles. I mean, you won't, if you see a pasture burning in the fall, it needs to be put out.
Something wrong,
you know, they're planning on their cattle eating that over the winter. So, but this time of year, from here till green grass, sky's gonna be full of smoke.
Yep, it will be. So we'll anything that loses control, of course, the rural departments and the city of Bartlesville will assist. Now that's one of the other things, is that, as you said, we're a municipal department. We're not equipped to handle it as a rural departments, but statewide mutual aid, if there's a fire and we're needed, we'll be there, and vice versa from them as well, correct?
Yes, exactly. There's a council adopted that statewide mutual aid agreement years ago. I can't tell you off the top of my head what year it was, but basically what it says, if you can assist a neighboring department, or really any department in state of Oklahoma, without depleting and, you know, causing a problem in your own fire district, you know, you're obligated to do so, and we do, and they do. I mean, we get assistance from the rural areas, you know, often, and we assist them whenever we can.
So good arrangement we've got.
Yeah.
Now, Chief, you've provided the council with a report that you do annually, and it's mostly statistics on the number of runs and fires and types of fires and medical calls and things of that nature that you do. So why don't you take a couple of minutes here. I know Jay's got some information he wanted to share on burglaries. So.
All right, well, I'll just run through it real quick. We had I kind of did a little quick comparison of 2016 to 2017. We actually made, we responded to 3,620 calls in 2017, which was 140 more incidents than what we had the year previous. And I was kind of curious where those came from, and I took a quick glance, and it looked like there was 100 of those calls, of the 140 that were logged under a false alarm a type call. Now, a false alarm, to what most people think that is and what it truly is, you know, it could have been just a malfunction of a system. I mean, it's not really somebody that's, you know, maliciously called in a false alarm just to see us go by with lights and sirens on. I mean, it could have been somebody smoking in a hotel room, you know, and set the smoke alarm off, or maybe the system just malfunctioned. So there's a lot of things that fall under that category, you know. So, and that looked like we had about 100 increase in that one line. So that, you know, that's probably the reason for that.
Now we actually have a false alarm ordinance that allows us to penalize somebody if there's repeated false alarms at their location. Because, of course, every time we roll a truck, there's a cost to the city. So,
I believe it's three. And we, you know, if we have a business or a home that we're making repeatedly calls to a short period of time, you know, we try to work with that individual to fix that problem. And
we would much rather work with them and have them fix it. But, of course, we do have that option if necessary.
And that our fire calls actually were, even though we had more structure fires in 17, we had less fires in 17 than what we did 16 by about, well, we had 188 fire calls in 2017 and 201 in 2016. So that's, and like I say, and when I say fire calls, you know, there's probably in the neighborhood of 50 of those that are going to be a building fire, structure fire type incident. The rest of them are car fires, you know, grass fires.
Grass fires,
There's a lot of different things that fall in. Cooking fires, you know, natural vegetation, forest, brush. And we got to have a lot of categories that break this stuff down. Yeah. And you know, depending on who fills out the run report, if you have a house fire, we have two options on our firehouse software, and you can either call it a structure fire or a building fire. So, you know, I'm not sure what the two, you know, to me they're the same thing, but and they're different to everybody, so we always have to look at, you know, a couple of different categories to truly get that number
together.
And our loss and save was, we had a huge save this year. The total value of structures and stuff that we responded on added up to $52,430,140. And we saved $50,982,306 for saves. So that's about
51 million out of 52.4 million. So that's a
97.24% save, which was actually up a little bit from 96. And that number's a big number. I mean, typically our property values run, 25 to 28 million. But we had a couple large incidents on some businesses that we got a good save on. That drove that number up some.
Well, Chief, we appreciate what you and your guys do.
Yeah. One item, Chief, that I think bears repeating, it was mentioned at a recent city council meeting, and I think, as far as I know, you're still looking for information on a series of apparent arsons all in one neighborhood during the early morning hours. Is that right?
Yes, and not just that one instance. If anybody has any information on any fires that you believe could have been arson, or you can call Crime Stoppers and give us that information and remain anonymous. So if there's some citizens out there that want to look at our year-end report, they can go on the city's website, click public safety, click fire department, go down that drop-down screen on the right, and it'll have annual fire report, and they can look at the last 3 years right there if they have some time they need to waste.
All right. Well, thank you, Chief. As I said, we truly appreciate what you and all of your firefighters do for the city of Bartlesville. And with that, I'm gonna hand this over to Captain Hastings. We'll actually give him his correct rank this time. Captain Hastings, you got about 5 minutes, and I know that we've had some issues with burglaries in particular. Of course, we've had them across town. We always mm-hmm. do, but there's one area that you've had pretty high concentration of them.
Yeah, we've been tracking the burglaries. Obviously, we looked at our stats for the last, 2015, 2016, 2017, and we're seeing an increase in our burglaries, residential burglaries. And the first two and a half months of, this year, we've seen the same increase. And we've kind of identified an area south of downtown, which would be south of Adams, kind of a border between Cherokee and the railroad tracks. And it's right around 14th Street, kind of runs through the middle of it. We've been seeing just a steady increase of residential burglaries in that area. Basically, we're trying to do some check some patterns. It appears to be happening kind of late afternoon, early evening. All these residents, there's nobody home. Some of these have been vacant residents. But we're just wanting to get the words out to citizens, all over town, not just that area. Just some tips on what they can do, and just to be alert and don't hesitate to call the police department, and to report any suspicious vehicles parked in the neighborhood or subjects walking down the street. Again, most burglaries do occur during the daytime. Residential burglaries occur during the daytime when the homeowner's away. Most of these people don't want to encounter people. They don't want to be witnessed. They want to get in, get out. A lot of these incidents, they've been kicking in back doors, just taking a few items they can carry. They're probably not in the residence more than 4 minutes. So we just want to get the word out. There's some crime prevention things that people can do. One is, communicate with your neighbors. Find out who your neighbors are and exchange cell phone numbers. A lot of times, you have retired individuals that live on the street that might be home during the daytime. You might contact them and exchange phone numbers. And a lot of it's just, communication. And then also don't hesitate to call in to the police department. We do have a non-emergency number. You don't have to call 911, and unless it's an emergency, but you can call 918-338-4001. And you'll get dispatch. If you just want to report, a suspicious individual, you're not going to be bothering us. I mean, we have dispatchers there, and that's what they're for. The citizens are really the eyes and the ears for the police department. I recall one burglary that it happened overnight, and it was quite a large loss. And we started knocking on doors and canvassing neighborhoods, and turns out the suspects parked their vehicle right in front of this man's house. And he came out at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and he wrote the tag number down, actually solved the burglary. So, just writing tag numbers down of suspicious vehicles, because you never know, when it may come back later to be a burglary in your neighborhood.
Anything that a homeowner can do in particular to help sort of reduce their chances of being victimized by this?
Well, yeah, you want to make your home appear lived in, like keep bushes and stuff trimmed. You might install motion lights, pick up newspapers and mail. It's been several years ago, but we had one burglar that he would check the mailbox and he would go up and knock on the door, and that was his, I'd get there and there'd be five or six newspapers laying in their front yard. So, make your home appear lived in. If you have leave a car parked in the driveway, if you're going to be gone on vacation, you kind of have to think like a burglar when you're looking at your house.
Right.
You want to make sure and leave lights on, change your routine sometimes, make sure you lock your cars and or lock your doors in your cars and remove valuables from your cars, stuff like that.
Okay. I appreciate it. All valuable tips. Charlie, you are heavily involved with Crime Stoppers here in Bartlesville, and I was trying to remember the number for Crime Stoppers and couldn't come up with it.
336-CLUE.
336-CLUE. So we would ask anybody that has any information on burglaries or on the arson investigations or any any arson in Bartlesville, to please call Crime Stoppers, 918-336-CLUE, that you can remain anonymous, and we certainly appreciate your help. As Captain Hastings said, the citizens of Bartlesville are the eyes and ears, and the police cannot be everywhere, so we really need your help.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you,
Charlie. We'll do it again real soon.
Appreciate it.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville.